This is The Guardian.
Today, an admission and an apology, of sorts. How will Boris Johnson come back from this latest scandal? Jonathan Friedland, can you remember what you were doing on the 20th of May, 2020?
Well, I don't think I'd have been able to identify the exact date until all this story blew up. But like a lot of people, I have been looking back, scrolling through the photos on the phone. And it's jogged memories, actually, of exactly that period. The weather, as we know, was glorious and sunny. And I think I, like a lot of people, around that period, I can't nail it to that day, but around that period, was taking the first tentative steps out into the open. But that was when going into the park and walking with a friend, I remember who it was, and keeping deliberately very, you know, vigilantly a distance, because that's how wary we were of breaking the rules and of risking anything. And it was one other person and it had to be in the park. It couldn't be anywhere else. And that seemed like a big treat.
Meanwhile, what was happening in Downing Street?
Well, a rather different picture has emerged of life on May the 20th, 2020, in Downing Street. We now know that there was a garden party organised because the weather was so good. There were about 100 invitees. The invitation came from the personal private secretary to the Prime Minister. Apparently about 40 people showed up of the 100 that were invited. The wording is extraordinary. The invitation that went by email, and the email was found by ITV News just a few days ago. And it says, after what has been an incredibly busy period, we thought it'd be nice to make the most of the lovely weather and have some socially distanced drinks in the number 10 garden this evening. Please bring your own booze.
We can reveal Boris Johnson's most senior officials sent an email inviting more than 100, yes, 100 people to a party in Downing Street that the Prime Minister himself attended.
Accounts, people who were there have testified that there was a drinks table laid out in the Downing Street garden, you know, stocked with gin and rosé and wine, or a choice of red or white, and guests arrived and mingled. It was a proper party. And, you know, like a lot of reporters, I've been in that Downing Street garden. It is a lovely setting for a summer party. It just happens to have been on a time where everyone else was locked up and meeting one person maximum, and not in private gardens where it might have been pleasant, but in a public place. So a stark contrast.
Yesterday, Boris Johnson finally surfaced to offer an admission in the House of Commons that he did attend that party in Downing Street, but that he somehow believed it to be a work event. And anyway, he only stayed for 25 minutes.
I know the rage they feel with me and with the government I lead when they think that in Downing Street itself, the rules are not being properly followed by the people who make the rules.
From The Guardian, I'm Nosheen Iqbal. Today in Focus, Boris Johnson has apologised for attending a party during the first COVID lockdown. Will it be enough to save him? Jonathan Friedland, you're a Guardian columnist and you've been following the saga of the Downing Street parties with every development. When Boris Johnson woke up yesterday morning, he would have been confronted by every front page of every newspaper telling him it was a make-or-break day for his premiership. We've spoken before about this, and it does feel a bit like a déjà vu, but has this new story taken the public anger to a new level?
I think it really has, partly because there's no hiding place with this one. There's no ambiguity. When you're using the language of please bring your own booze, and there are accounts of a table laid, you know, with gin and rosé wine, you know, nobody's work includes that, and that's nobody's definition of work includes that. So that's one point, is no ambiguity. I mean, it was bad enough before Christmas when there were these revelations of Christmas parties the previous year that had happened, as we all said at the time and we wrote, in his house. You know, they were in Downing Street, they were under his nose. That was bad. but he wasn't actually there in some of them. Here, all of those different ambiguities and nuances are removed. This is a party, it's during lockdown, and we now know he was present.
I will never, ever vote for the Conservative Party again.
Right.
I'm nearly 80, and I have voted for them all my life.
Good Lord.
On May the 20th, 2020, I stood on the pavement outside my flat, and I said goodbye to my husband, and I couldn't go with him to hospital. And I stood there alone as the ambulance went.
People do have memories of where they were in May 2020. And it was a period where a lot of people were dying, and they were dying in the saddest possible circumstances, which is they were very often dying alone. And I think what maybe could be looked upon as something of a turning point, or just anyway one of the critical moments in this saga, was the Northern Ireland MP Jim Shannon breaking down in the House of Commons on Tuesday when he, and you could tell he wasn't expecting to be as affected by his own words, I think, was when he just, as an aside, mentioned that his mother-in-law had died in that period alone. And obviously the memory came back to him.
In Northern Ireland, we reached the milestone of 3,000 deaths due to COVID just last week. 3,000 people who followed the rules and grieved today. So will the paymaster, including my mother-in-law who died alone, will...
He broke down and did seem almost broken by the recollection.
Will the paymaster general confirm that there will be a full and complete disclosure to enable the police service to ascertain it all was done decently and within the regulations at the date and at that time? I'm sorry, Mr. Speaker.
Minister,
I'm very sorry for his loss, Mr. Speaker.
All of that put together means he is front and centre, Boris Johnson, of this story in a way that was nearly there but not quite in the previous iterations.
And while all this anger has been brewing, where was Boris Johnson? Where has he been?
This was itself a question because he wasn't in the chamber. He sent out the luckless paymaster general, a sort of junior minister, to speak instead and take the heat on Tuesday in the Commons, and he had been absent.
I want to ask you about the latest allegations on Christmas parties. Did you and Carrie attend the Downing Street party that was organised by Martin Reynolds on the 20th of May?
All that, as you know, is the subject of a proper investigation by Sue Gray.
He did, you know, a short clip for TV News, which didn't win, you know, do him any favours. And his position was just to say we need to wait for the inquiry that is being headed up by this very senior civil servant, Sue Gray, and wait to hear the evidence.
So have you already been interviewed by Sue Gray? And if not, do you object to her questioning you again about this?
All that is subject for an interview, for an investigation by Sue Gray.
That itself became yet another mark against Boris Johnson, because the question of the hour was a very simple one, which was, were you present at that party on May the 20th? And so the idea that, oh, we need to wait for a full inquiry to know that, no, you really would know that yourself. And so that his absence did, in its own right, become a problem. But he finally did appear as billed at Prime Minister's Question. Some people were joking whether he would mysteriously find himself testing positive for the Omicron variant on Wednesday morning at 11:55. But he didn't, and he was there, and that was always going to be the big moment.
We're now going to start PMQs, but before we do, I want to remind everybody...
There is always this kind of tingle of adrenaline, and on opposition benches, I would say excitement, when there is scheduled one of these showdown moments. And it was definitely one of those where people were gripped by what this moment was going to bring. Boris Johnson's had two or three of those already in his short premiership, and he went to this one in the same mode, which was to attempt to take the wind out of the sails of the opposition, and particularly of Keir Starmer. And so he began by saying, I want to say sorry.
And to them and to this House, I offer my heartfelt apologies.
Boris Johnson's apology, I think, was very carefully worded. Lots of people think, legal scholars including, that it was obviously lawyered. He said that he attended because he believed implicitly that it was a work event, and that with hindsight, he should have sent everyone back inside. But he did say that he thought technically it could be said to fall within the guidance. And then hastily he said, and of course I know millions of people wouldn't see it that way. But in effect, he was saying they were wrong. I don't know what guidance he was reading, because nobody else thought you could be at a party with wine and booze and 40 people. Not at that time. In May 2020, we thought the rules were really strict.
Number 10 is a big department with the garden as an extension of the office, which has been in constant use because of the role of fresh air in stopping the virus. And when I went into that garden just after 6 on the 20th of May 2020... to thank groups of staff before going back into my office 25 minutes later to continue working, I believed implicitly that this was a work event.
The plausibility of the work event idea, I think that's going to become a kind of running joke, actually, because it just doesn't hold up. And there will be people imagining, I'm sure the cartoonists will be at work, of somebody who's surrounded by drink and booze and food and wine and people slumped in corners, you know, late at night, and saying, you know, I thought it was a work event.
We now come to the leader of the opposition, Keir Starmer.
Shortly after, Keir Starmer began to ask his questions, and this was a huge moment for him as well. What was his line of attack?
He'd obviously prepared himself for the very likely scenario that Boris Johnson would attempt a preemptive apology. So he was ready for that, and to say, it's just not good enough. It's the end of the line.
His defence that he didn't realise he was at a party. it is so ridiculous.
And he alternated between semi-forensic in pressing the contradictions between what Boris Johnson is saying now and what he had said earlier in the House of Commons, in where he said he was shocked and disgusted back in December to hear that there had been partying in Downing Street.
Everyone could see what happened. Exactly. It started with reports of boozy parties in Downing Street during lockdown. The Prime Minister pretended that he had been assured there were no parties. Yeah. How that fits with his defence out, I do not know. Exactly. Then the video landed.
And he would move between that and then the kind of moral, emotional territory of people out there in the country who were grieving and forcing the Prime Minister to emote and say, isn't that terrible?
Hannah Brady's father, Sean, was just 55 when he lost his life to COVID. He was a fit and healthy key worker. I spoke to Hannah last night, Prime Minister. Her father died just days before the drinks trolley was being wheeled through Downing Street.
But when we last spoke, you did say Keir Starmer's best strategy may have been to let the Tories rip themselves apart. And you also suggested that Starmer would likely only call for Johnson's resignation if it was extremely likely to happen. And now he has.
Is he now going to do the decent thing and resign?
Yes, I mean, he has always held back on that until now, and that's really significant. The fear, and this is partly what led me to say it last time, was that if you call for a Prime Minister to resign, it can encourage unity in the Prime Minister's party where otherwise no unity would exist. And so that's the risk. There is a certain kind of tribally loyal Tory who thinks, well, in that case, I'm closing ranks. And so that can be difficult. And equally, you don't want to seem impotent by demanding a resignation that then doesn't come. So I think Keir Starmer must have made a calculation that it is now at least probable, you know, or more than 50% likely that Johnson will be pushed out. And therefore, you have to, as leader of the opposition, be able to claim credit for that. And there's almost a greater risk. And these are the calculations you make as a leader of the opposition. The greater risk now would be Boris Johnson going and people saying, well, no thanks to you, Starmer, you never even had the guts to call for him to go.
Right.
That's, in a way, a kind of tipping point, was clearly passed in the judgment of Keir Starmer and his team. And so that's telling you how they read the current mood.
So the Prime Minister didn't spot that he was at a social event. That's the excuse, isn't it? Come off it. I mean, how stupid does the Prime Minister think the British people are?
So as PMQs went on, Johnson's performance seemed more and more extraordinary. And to me, it looked like he was pretty shell-shocked. And, you know, depending on where you sit, either very grotesquely or admirably, he was at least trying to shrug it off. What did you make of it?
Yeah, I'm sort of such a sceptic slash cynic with Boris Johnson that I think he is an actor.
I've come to this house to make amends, to explain what happened on May the 20th and to apologise.
I think, to me, I looked at him and I thought, that's the face you had on you when you were brought to the headmaster's study at Eton, where you know you've got to look contrite and pretend and bite your lower lip, and then you leave and high-five your friends and say, I've got away with it again. So I was not really buying it, truthfully. I think he knows he's got, you know, he had to look apologetic. I think that is a long way from being apologetic.
But, Mr. Speaker, I really think that, with all humility, I must ask him to wait for the result of the inquiry, where he will have abundant opportunity, Mr. Speaker, to question me again.
In all subsequent answers to questions from Keir Starmer and others, he fell back on the same formula all the time, which was wait for this inquiry by Sue Gray, and then you can make all the points you like to me. That, you know, that was the position he wanted to hold on to and to cling to throughout Prime Minister's questions.
Now we've seen the Tories leader in Scotland, Douglas Ross, as well as several of his colleagues, already come out and say they now think Boris Johnson should go. But what about the other MPs in the chamber? What do you think they made of it?
Well, I think his own side are making those calculations, and they will want to know what their own constituents are saying. There will be lots of conversations going on between them and their constituents. This weekend will really matter. That will matter a lot. Tory MPs will go back to their constituencies, and that's when they test the temperature. And you know, you talk to MPs, they always have their own little mini unofficial focus group, meaning four or five individuals who they always run things past, and they know that if, you know, Bill at number 55, who was always so pro-Boris, has now turned on him, well, that's significant. You know, they'll all have those kind of bellwether constituents in their mind, and it's about whether they think Johnson has done enough to get away with it, or whether he's gone past the point of no return. And actually, if they continue or publicly defend Boris Johnson, well, some of that mud could stick to them. They'll be making very selfish and self-centered calculations. Does this help me keep my seat, or does this put me in trouble? That's the calculus.
Coming up, what can we expect of the independent inquiry into the Downing Street parties? And how much trouble is Boris Johnson now in? Jonathan, as we've been hearing throughout this saga, the Prime Minister and all those defending him have pointed to the independent investigation being carried out by the senior civil servant Sue Gray. What do we know about that inquiry, and when will we hear her conclusions?
For a while, when I heard there was an inquiry by a senior civil servant, I thought, well, okay, so they've done the usual and kicked this into the long grass. This could go on for weeks or months. I think the political pressure now is too great for that. And actually, it's not now in their interests, or Boris Johnson's interest, for it to go on too long, because he will be on the rack about this story until she reports. So what we're hearing is possibly the end of next week. I think that may be early and it may go on longer. But, you know, I think the idea is weeks rather than months, and weeks, you know, a small number of weeks.
Is an investigation by a civil servant enough? I mean, what powers does she actually have to demand evidence or take action after she reports back?
Well, there are the official powers she has, and those are pretty strong. I mean, she can demand access to the CCTV pictures. Obviously, there are always police at Downing Street monitoring who goes in and out. She could ask to see those. So she does have some power, just in technically, but I think that it's the politics of this that give her huge power. This moment is so great that any attempt by Downing Street to bamboozle or stonewall her, you know, I think she would only have to raise an eyebrow if she felt she wasn't getting full cooperation for them to know they are in such trouble now already that they would surely not dare make things worse for themselves. They need her to say, I'm getting full cooperation. So I think she's got maximum power. What's a quirk of our system is the person who then decides whether this investigation into Boris Johnson should lead to action against Boris Johnson. Well, that person is Boris Johnson.
Right, yeah.
And that is the weirdness of our system, where the Prime Minister is the ultimate arbiter, judge, jury and enforcer of the ministerial code. One of her demands, you know, could be that I want everything to be made public. Even if she doesn't make it public, it will eventually be known. But she can exert great pressure on him through that, although the ultimate official power to publish it or to act on it will be his.
Well, there's also the pretty significant matter of the legality of this party. We know the Metropolitan Police have been very reluctant to investigate past allegations of parties at number 10. Will they finally feel pressure to take action now?
Yeah, I think there is pressure on everybody involved in this story. And, you know, Sue Gray, there's pressure on her to prove her independence, that she's not some kind of patsy. And the police, I mean, I don't really know how they don't investigate this, given they really did investigate breaches of the regulations all throughout 2020. We all remember it, where hill walkers and others were spotted by police drones and helicopters in the countryside. You know, I think it will be really difficult for them to say that they're just not going to investigate it. What they have said so far is, you know, I think that they are in touch with the Cabinet Office, and so they can delay this for ages. I mean, nobody can pressure them on timing.
But I think, unfortunately, you know, this is becoming now an issue of confidence in the police, because clearly, you know, questions have been asked, why are the police not investigating? Normally, if there's an organisation is thought to have breached the law, you don't normally leave it for that organisation to go away and investigate it themselves and wait for the result.
There will be questions, incidentally, for the police themselves, because there are police, as anyone who's gone to Downing Street knows, there are police on the door and on every door. I mean, it is a very heavily policed building. And surely they will have known that this gathering took place. And so questions they'll have to answer is, well, why didn't they then feel the collar of the Downing Street official, Martin Reynolds, who sent out the invitation, or the Prime Minister himself? Why were they thinking it's one law for the people at the top and one law for everyone else? Bad look for them if that was the case.
So if the civil servants don't get you, and neither do the police, it seems that Tory MPs might well be the most ruthless of the lot, in the fact that until another election, it is only Tory MPs who can remove Johnson from office. After this week, do you think that they might?
They definitely might. It's definitely possible, in a way that with other ones, it was a really, really remote likelihood. I'm not going to bet any money on it, partly because, you know, I gave up the predictions game a long time ago, and partly because that he has had, and you don't discount it, a remarkable Teflon hide, or to mix the metaphor, he's had a Teflon covering that has protected him. And he is still, by a long way, their most successful vote-winning politician. And there will be quite a few MPs who go, I know this is indefensible, I know it's intolerable, but I wonder if by the time of the next election it will sort of be in the past, and his old magic will have returned. You know, there are people talking about the red wall seats taken from Labour, where a big part of the win was that those voters said it was partly about Brexit, yes, but partly about leadership. They thought he was not like your regular politician. They thought he was funny and entertaining and sort of different. And there will be some MPs who just think, look, I know we all feel in the heat of this moment that he's done something terrible, and he has, but he's got magic that none of the rest of us have. So I wouldn't write him off yet, but he's definitely in the most perilous state he's ever been, and it's moved from, I would say, from possible to probable, but that doesn't mean it's a dead cert.
Do you think he's banking on the fact that most people are too fed up to care? I mean, as you said, he is a remarkable political escape artist, and this might not matter in a few months.
Yeah, I think politicians, when they're in a corner, they do think something will come up, and partly because it always has for them. And for him, as you say, an escape artist of Houdini proportions, he's, you know, nobody has had a career like his where they've been caught lying and they've resigned and they've been sacked and they still make it to the top. He would say to you or me, I think, I agree with you lesser mortals would have gone over this, but I'm not a lesser mortal and I can might rebound. But they all think that until the day they don't, and they realise that they've run out of, you know, escapes. He probably thinks that something extraordinary will come up, like a huge fade away of Omicron. The Omicron gives a kind of herd immunity, and that thereafter, maybe even by the spring or summer, COVID is just a kind of cold, and he will think, yeah, I'm out of the woods. And May 2020 seems like ancient history. You know, even just saying it, you realise that is a real stretch. It's very hard to believe that's going to happen, but I think he will be clinging to that hope, and he's got a life experience that tells him people like him get away with it.
Jonathan, thank you so much.
Such a pleasure. Good to be with you.
That was Jonathan Friedland, and you can read more of his analysis and follow the developments on this story at theguardian.com. And you can join Guardian journalists, including Jonathan, next Wednesday evening for a live stream discussion on what all this means for Boris Johnson's future. Find out how you can buy tickets for that at guardianlive.com. That's all for today. The producer was Sammy Kent. Sound design was by Rudy Zagadlo. The executive producers are Phil Maynard and Maithili Rao. We're back tomorrow.
This is The Guardian.